Good evening, friends. Franz Weinschenk here, once again welcoming you to Valley Writers Read, where all the writers that read their stories for us either have in the past or currently reside right here in the San Joaquin Valley of Central California. And of course, so it is tonight, when we're delighted to present Fresno author Larry Warkentin, who'll be reading a story of his entitled, Are We There Yet? Here he is, Larry Warkentin. Are We There Yet?
Are We There Yet? Yesterday, I was planning an exciting adventure on my own somewhere along the coast of the Sea of Azov. Today, I'm trapped on a train slowly slogging its way to Antwerp and a waiting ship. How long will I be imprisoned in this rattling iron cage? Who knows? 1,200 miles at 40 miles per hour guarantees at least 30 hours. With layovers, waiting for connecting trains, and document inspections at every border, we can expect at least 4 days and nights. The nights are sheer torture. 5 of us crowded in one cell. Yes, 5. Mother and her new husband, who I refuse to call father. Gerhard, my little brother, who I soon shall be calling George, and our half-brother, Jacob, who does all the inconvenient things that one-year-old infants do so enthusiastically, like screaming at the slightest provocation and eliminating the foulest-smelling substances from either end. All I can say is that Nebraska had better be the Garden of Eden, or we are going to a lot of trouble for nothing. If I ever get my hands on that stupid horse, Jasper, I'd make him swallow his own tail. Then he'd have to eat his own apples. That would serve him right for breaking my arm. But he is safe, since I will never again see him or the beautiful fields of Continuousveld that stretch as far as the eye can see. And where are we at the moment? Somewhere on the western side of the Dnieper River, heading to Warsaw. This morning, the family has left me alone to convalesce. Here I lie on a hard bench that cannot accommodate my long legs. I remember reading the Greek legend of Procustes, who shortened the legs of his guests so they would fit his short bed. I've tried every possible position to relieve those points at which my bones are trying to escape through my skin. Maybe I should try to cut off my legs at the knees. Then I would fit. But that would not relieve the continuous bouncing and shifting of this bed. The Procrustean bed was not bouncing in rhythm to the drumbeat of iron wheels on iron tracks. Here I lie, on my back, with my head on a rolled-up coat and my knees bent grasshopper-like. My broken arm, wrapped in splints and bandages, throbs in unison with the train. This is my great adventure. Leather suitcases burdening the wrought iron shelf above me, grimy tassels from the frame above my head dancing like weeds in a windstorm. A soot-painted window blocking the boring view, a decrepit sliding door with a cracked glass opening and closing at the whims of indecisive ghosts. Nothing to do but sleep. Nothing to do but... A figure enters. My bleary eyes struggle to give it shape. Definitely human. Long, black, matted hair pierced by a single feather. A loose shirt decorated with tiny beadwork in complex designs. Is it male or female? Thin leather slippers show beneath a skirt of gaudy red and green. It must be a Cossack woman. I have trouble focusing my thoughts. Perhaps if I shake my head, things will clear up.
You are confused, my child. Relax. All will be clear soon.
She speaks and yet does not speak. I seem to hear her thoughts in my own language. Only Mennonites speak Low German, and she is definitely not Mennonite.
You are troubled, my child. Don't be. I come from far, far away. I come from America.
Not possible. I am somewhere in Prussia. There are no Americans on this train.
I am not American. I am Pawnee.
Pawnee? I remember reading about the Pawnee Indians in Teacher Franz's books. They are the natives of Nebraska, where I am destined. How did you come here?
Do not ask how. Rather ask why.
What?
I have come to strengthen you. Fear not the future. You will endure. You will overcome. You will prosper. Your sons will live from Monday till Monday.
What does that mean?
You will know when you know.
Now I know who you are. You're a gypsy, a fortune teller. You want money. Get out! Get out! Get...
Aaron, wake up. What are you shouting about? You'll wake little Jacob. He finally fell asleep.
Oh, when did you come back? Did you see a strange gypsy woman in the walkway?
Of course not. You were dreaming.
I need to walk and think. You and baby Jacob can rest here in our compartment.
Be careful. The train shakes a lot. You don't want to bump your arm.
I'll be careful. A trainload of Mennonites, Friesens, Jansens, Petkers, Queerings, Bartels. Strange cargo, yet all too familiar. Six carriages pulled by a fire-breathing dragon heading to a fantasy destination. The tracks determine our destination just as our faith tradition determines our decisions. The tracks turn to the west. The carriage lurches, and every passenger tumbles in unison. Through the murky windows, I catch a glimpse of the engine, our source of power. The prominent smokestack blowing dark storm clouds with sparks of flashing lightning. The massive arms pumping like muscular farmers swinging scythes in a wheat field. Iron wheels devour the tracks, like hungry farmhands sucking noodles from chicken soup. The train slows and stops, but not for long. This is not a food stop for passengers, but rather a banquet for the belly of the iron horse, water to cool its parched throat, and split oak to feed its voracious appetite.
Young man, you may not enter the next carriage.
Why is that?
The Friesen family is expecting a new member within the hour. We have emptied the carriage of all passengers until the delivery is complete. I'm sure you understand.
That's what I call poor planning. They knew this journey was imminent. George could have restrained himself for a few months. Babies are a gift from God, but even he needs human participation to get the job done. Nevertheless, the baby will be born, and we will leave the family in private.
Good morning, Aaron.
What's happening, Abe?
Nisht. Did you sleep at all?
I don't know. When I'm awake, I'm not asleep. When I'm asleep, I'm not awake, so I can't tell. All I know is that I feel like I've been pitching wheat onto a wagon for 2 days straight. At least I'm not pregnant like Mary Friesen.
She's not pregnant anymore. Little Nicholas was born just minutes ago.
What's the word? How'd it go?
No problems.
I wonder what his birth certificate will say. Born in Russia, Prussia, and Belgium?
Are we in Belgium already?
Not quite, but soon.
Then what?
The ship should be waiting when we get to the port. The SS Switzerland is apparently a fairly new ship, launched in 1873, just 6 years ago. The advertisement said that it is 329 feet long and 39 feet wide. I saw a picture of it. It has a steam engine with one huge smokestack and two masts with tall sails. It can hold up to 600 people in third class. Third class is a fancy term for steerage. That means we will be cooped up below deck in large dormitory rooms with rows of bunk beds. Doesn't that sound like fun? We'll know how loud Mr. Brown snores and how Mr. Gertsen's digestive tract is doing every time he makes wind. The only hurdle we have to get over before boarding is health inspection.
I thought we went through that at the Russian border.
Yes, but this inspection is more crucial. The ship crowds us all into a confined space. Any contagious or infectious disease could spread through all the passengers. America is not interested in importing sick, disabled, or deranged people.
So what happens to anyone who is refused?
I guess they have to wait until they are healthy and then come on a later ship, or, in the worst case, they might be sent back to Russia.
Porter, what time do we expect to be at the Antwerp station?
If all goes well, we should be there at sunrise tomorrow.
Are you boarding a ship there?
Yes, and the SS Switzerland is scheduled to sail on June 9 at 7 p.m. We've been through a calendar change and a time change. What is the day and date today, and what time is it?
A calendar change? What does that mean?
Russia, where we started, uses the Julian calendar, and it tells us that today is May 29.
That's news to me. Every country this train travels through says that today is June 8, 1879.
I must have slept longer than I thought. Suddenly, 11 days have disappeared.
And the time is 9 in the morning.
Very well. We have to get used to many changes. Calendar, language, weather, laws, and farming techniques.
I wonder how long it will take us to feel like it is time for our noon meal instead of time to go to sleep. Sunset in Russia is sunrise in Nebraska.
Is there anything interesting to see in Antwerp?
Well, you both look too young to enjoy the sights in the taverns around the port. So I think the next best points of interest are the cathedral and the Great Market. The market square is said to be one of the grandest in all Europe. You might have time to see it between your arrival at the train station and boarding the ship.
Is the distance walkable?
Any distance is walkable, if you are strong enough and have enough time. You'd have to hurry. Just keep your eyes on the cathedral spire, and you'll find the square easily.
What do you think, Abe? Shall we try it?
We'll never have another chance, that's for sure.
If we have time, I'm game. Right now, we'd better get back to our families. Our fathers have all the money, and if we want any food, we'd better be with them.
See you later. Carriage after carriage, I do my drunken dance past Walls, Crakers, Penners, Dukes, and little Nicholas Friesen attached to his mother's breast like a mosquito on a bald man's head.
Good luck, little Nick. You're named for the saint of sailors. Soon we will need your patron's blessing.
Here we are at last in Antwerp,
unrested, unbathed, and unhappy after 4.5 days of torture. Unfortunately, there is no here, just a modest train station, definitely in need of replacement. Our fearless leaders find wagons, horses, and drivers to transport our meager belongings to the main dock, where we are told the ship awaits the onslaught of Mennonites. Mr. Greva, Abraham and I plan to look around Antwerp before going to the dock.
Your mother and I think it is unwise for you two to become separated from the group.
Abe is 16 and I am 15. We can manage a few hours on our own.
What did Abe's father say?
He did not object.
Then I suppose, against my better judgment, I cannot object. Remember, we will have one more health inspection before boarding. We sail at dawn, but we must be on board before sunset this afternoon. Do you need money?
No, we can walk, and we'll take some rye bread and toasted tveibok to eat. This will be the only time in our life to see this famous city. Don't worry about us.
Aaron, we didn't even ask my father. Don't you feel guilty for saying that he didn't object?
I didn't lie. Your father did not object.
Only because he was never asked.
Well, he didn't object. Do you want to go ask him now?
I really should.
Fine. Go ask. He's right over there.
Father?
Yes, Abe. What is it?
Aaron and I plan to spend a little time seeing the sights in Antwerp before we go to the ship.
Surely Jacob Greva did not agree to that.
Actually, he did not object.
Then, against my better judgment, I suppose I cannot object. Be careful and be sure you are at the dock by sunset. You are both young adults, so be responsible. This will be a good chance for you to learn about this great city and its impressive cathedral.
I wish I could go with you. Don't worry. We have some food and we have directions to the cathedral.
Did he object?
He said that if your father agreed, then he could not object.
We should go into politics. We could promise a chicken in every pot and then convince the people that they really need potato soup.
Where shall we go first?
Let's head toward the cathedral spire and keep our eyes open for anything interesting along the way.
Keep your eyes on the church tower. That's what the porter said. It doesn't look too far away.
Antwerp sure doesn't look like our village of Continuousveld. There we had one straight street down the middle of the village, houses lined up on both sides of the street, gardens carefully organized, and acacia trees lined up like schoolboys before class. None of that here. Streets twisting in every direction, houses crowded together like omas on a church pew, grass growing between the cobblestones, and everywhere people. Fat people, skinny people, old people, young people, poor people dressed in rags, rich people in elegant clothes. Did you see that brunette? Her neckline was low enough to catch cherries in her cleavage.
I noticed, but remember, we're here to see the cathedral, not the women. Women you can see anywhere.
Not women like that.
Now I've lost sight of the tower. These narrow streets and tall houses have blocked our view.
Use your hunter's sense. We know where the sun is and where the shadows fall. The last time I saw the spire, it was northeast of us.
Excellent idea, as long as the clouds don't blot out the sun.
There aren't many clouds, so we shouldn't have any problem.
I wish these streets didn't turn and bend so much. We can't head straight toward the tower.
Look at this!
We're in a square that could contain our entire village. What are those grand buildings?
They aren't the church. The cathedral tower is behind them.
I guess this great building is the city hall.
If this is the city hall, what is the building next to it?
Well, Antwerp is a major shipping center. I'd guess that building is the business center. See, there is a statue of Neptune over the door. He represents international trade.
What makes you think it is Neptune?
For one thing, he's holding that three-pronged fork.
Maybe he's just a naked farmer pitching wheat sheaves.
He'd likely get straw where he doesn't want it dressed like that.
Let's go on to the cathedral. If it is more impressive than these two buildings, then it will certainly be worth a visit.
We're almost there. If these clouds get any darker, we may be in for some rain. We may need to hide in the church to keep from getting wet. It should be just around the next corner.
Dear God, it is taller than the Tower of Babel. Our church back home could fit in the doorway. It looks a little strange with one short tower and one amazingly tall one. Maybe it's like me with one arm in a sling.
Look at all those statues. How can anyone make them out of stone? It must take years to carve the shape.
I've been trying to figure out who some of the statues represent. In the center is a woman with a baby. That must be Mary and Jesus. And the man, wearing an animal skin and pointing at Jesus, must be John the Baptist.
And that must be Peter, because he is big and strong and he's holding a key. Remember, Jesus said, "I give you the keys to the kingdom."
I just remembered something from The Martyr's Mirror. Anne van Utenhoven was buried alive near Antwerp. She was accused for being a Mennonite.
I don't suppose we'll find her statue on this cathedral?
Certainly not. But it is amazing to think that we are in the place where our faith ancestors died. Bishop Hovius from this very cathedral ordered her death, and he stood by as they slowly covered her with dirt. And then he ordered the workers to stomp on the soil over her head so she would not suffer too long.
Let's not tell anyone that we are Mennonites.
I wonder if we could go in.
I've seen some people entering through that side door. Let's give it a try.
How can such a building stand? It's taller than any of the hills along the Molochna River. All the Mennonites of South Russia could gather here at one time. Even the great Cortiza oak is not as tall as these pillars. And here is a forest of pillars.
I've got to sit down. My heart is racing, and I can hardly breathe. Only God could build such a house. The people are all sitting quietly, as if they are expecting something.
What is that sound? It's like 1,000 trumpets sounding from every direction, joined by flutes, clarinets, and violins.
Look behind us, there, above the entrance. Thousands of pipes surrounding a fancy desk, and a little man moving his hands over the keyboard.
Surely we have died, and this is the orchestra of heaven. If heaven is this beautiful, let me die right now. The windows have come alive. A bright beam of sunlight is turning the glass blood red, starlight blue, and a shower of gold is spilling down on us, as if God is cleaning house.
Aaron, you are a crazy poet. We can't stay here much longer. We've got to get back to the port.
One more organ piece. We may never hear anything this beautiful in a place this awesome as long as we live. I doubt that Henderson, Nebraska, can match this.
Then we leave when the next composition ends.
The windows are darkening. What is that distant rumble? Surely Antwerp is not coming under cannon fire.
I think it is thunder. The clouds are fulfilling their promise.
Maybe it is the voice of God pronouncing judgment on us for deceiving our parents.
It is only a storm. It will blow over.
The windows seem alive. Each flash of lightning brings another scene to life. The nativity, the crucifixion, the last judgment. It is God pronouncing judgment.
Get control of yourself, Aaron. It is only a storm.
The walls are vibrating. Let's get out of here. I fear it may collapse on us.
Relax. This cathedral has been here for hundreds of years. It has weathered greater storms than this.
At least let's go out and stand under the entrance arch. I need to see the sky.
So, do you feel better now?
A little. I hope it stops raining soon. Look at the rain spouts. They're vomiting like sick dogs.
It is only a thunderstorm. In a little while, it will stop.
Lightning and instant thunder. That is too close. We will be struck dead.
We can't wait here forever. Let's go now. The rain has slowed down.
I agree. Which way shall we go?
I thought you would know.
These streets are so narrow and twisting, I'm not sure. The sun sets in the west, and the ocean is in that direction, so we should head that way.
But where is the dock? I know the Schilt River bends and turns, and the dock is along the river. Let's ask someone.
Sir, can you tell us how to find the main ship dock?
What are you saying? I don't speak German. You crazy immigrants are all the same, dirty and stupid.
I can't understand him.
Try Low German.
Help find main ship dock.
Slowly, again, please.
Ship dock. SS Switzerland.
Oh, main dock. 2 hours walk.
I think he said 2 hours. His Flemish and our Low German have some similarity.
We'd better start running. The sun is hidden behind the clouds, but I think it is almost setting.
Please draw a map.
Paper? Pencil? Ship?
Thank you. I hope we got dependable directions. Doesn't do much good to run if you're heading in the wrong direction.
Faster, Aaron!
I can't run any faster with my broken arm in this sling.
I see the river at the end of this street. It looks more like a lake than a river.
Slow down. I'm out of breath and my arm is hurting.
Keep running. A little pain is better than missing the boat.
I see the ship in the distance, 2 tall sailing masts and 1 belching smokestack.
Why would they have the steam engine operating already?
What if we got the departure time wrong?
Or maybe they decided to leave early.
There are no people waiting on the dock. Everyone must be on board already.
Our parents will be furious.
If we miss the boat, we won't have to hear their lecture, but we'll have to figure out what to do next.
Here's a sign, embarkation health check. I think that's where we start.
Name?
Abraham Bartsch.
And yours?
Aaron Bartsch.
Are you brothers?
No, cousins.
I see Abraham Bartsch on the list, but no Aaron Bartsch. Abraham, any health problems?
No.
Let me check your eyes and ears. Stick out your tongue. You're in good health. Proceed to the boarding ramp.
I'll wait for Aaron.
There is no Aaron Bartsch on the list. And why is your arm in a sling? America does not need cripples. I'll check your general health, but the captain will have to confirm that you can board with a broken arm.
and somehow we have to figure out why your name is not on the list.
Aaron, the doctor is gone to find the captain. We'd better make a dash for it while no one is watching.
But I know I am registered. I know my parents have paid. Why is there a problem?
Then you're legal, so get on board now.
What a day this has been. I've been as close to heaven as any living person can be. And now I'm a stowaway on an emigrant ship.
It is an amazing ship. Imagine. It can hold more than 600 people. It's larger than the Gnadenfeld Church.
Abe, look down there on the boarding ramp. It's the doctor and the captain, with a guard in military uniform, and he's got a sword. They are looking for me. I've got to hide. Here, I'll hide in this coil of ropes. Put something on top.
No, that's too obvious. Over there are two chests for life jackets. Climb into one of them and cover yourself with life jackets. I won't watch which one you choose. That way I can honestly say I don't know where you are.
You, Abraham Bartsch, where is that cripple you arrived with? He must have come on board with you.
His parents have paid for his voyage.
Be that as it may, I want to know where he is.
I'm sorry, I don't know where he is.
Captain, I think he may be hiding in this coil of ropes. Young Abraham is not a very good liar. I have watched him, and his eyes betray him. I'll just take my sword and stab it between the strands of rope. That should bring our stowaway to light.
Don't let him do that, Captain. If someone is hiding there, he might be injured or killed.
You see, Captain, he's not a good liar. I'll just tickle the stowaway with my sword. No, Sergeant, we will simply look for ourselves. Remove that board on top of the ropes and look inside. Come out, you little coward.
What? There is no one here.
That will be enough, Sergeant. I'll take charge now. On shore, you represent the law, but on this ship, I, the captain, am the law. Yes, sir. I'll wait on the ramp to make sure no one else tries to sneak on board. Abraham, we don't like it when someone boards without permission. When you find your friend, which I believe you can do rather easily, tell him that the captain has given permission for him to board, even with his broken arm. And we also discovered why his name is not on the boarding list. His parents reported his name to be Aaron Greva. We understand that Aaron's mother has recently married Mr. Greva. Sorry for the misunderstanding. Tell Aaron he is approved.
Thank you, Doctor and Captain. I'm sure Aaron will be very pleased to hear that. I'll tell him when I see him.
What a recurring nightmare of waves, wind, women washing diapers, bellies disgorging yesterday's distasteful dinner, and pretty girls smiling one moment and the next bending over the rail, vomiting like gargoyles in a cloudburst. The ocean's ever-changing sameness is neither grand nor terrifying, only boring. The view from my bunk in the second stomach of this ruminating cow is not more or less boring than the view from on deck. Looking up, I see the boards of Abe's bunk only inches above my face. Looking to the side, I see a narrow path beyond which other men are stacked like slabs of beef curing in a smokehouse. At my feet, all my earthly belongings are in a ragged sack. Abe and I, along with 20 other single males of potential threat to single women, are assigned to the back stable of this floating barn. Families and children make up the larger middle section, and single women are cloistered in the front compartment.
The areas are separated from each other by metal partitions, and each section has its own hatch. No one in steerage has privacy, and all are entertained by the constant gurgles and groans of the steam engine as it digests its diet of black coal. The family compartment is divided into open cubicles. Parents sleep with children, crowded like sausages in an oven. The beds are straw-stuffed boxes with protective sides to keep us from tumbling out when Mother Nature rocks too vigorously. At the end of each compartment is the outhouse, which is in constant demand and is noticeably not out far enough. Fortunately for us, it empties into the sea. I'm not so sure it is fortunate for the fish.
Number 17, time for lunch.
That's our number. The Greve clan now joins the Goosens, Heinrichs, Heberts, and Jansens, all in alphabetical procession to the galley, like cattle to the manger where our daily feeding of oats and barley is dispensed. We parade past other hungry cattle to our assigned cubicles. There is no dining room table for steerage passengers. We cannot gather around the family table for morning devotions. No discussion of the day's plans. No opportunity to blend in singing praise to God. Lobe den Herrn, O meine Seele. I long for those mornings when my father was still living and our cottage glowed with praise and harmony. Here we devour our inferior fodder on the edge of our bunks, surrounded by our baggage, inhibited by proximity to other families.
Everyone out! Today we fumigate the steerage.
But we haven't finished eating.
Take the food with you.
But the baby is still sleeping.
Sorry, this is necessary for the health and safety.
Can we leave our stuff?
Yes. Fumigation destroys fleas, lice, and other vermin.
How long?
1 hour to fumigate, 1 hour to clear the fumes.
The herd of 600 is crowded on deck, cocooned in quilts against the crisp breeze. At least we aren't required to swim in sheep dip, although good Mennonite brethren are committed to baptism by immersion.
The morning wind is from the north.
The sails are set to take full advantage of the wind. The ever-present steam engine churns and groans, belching its clouds from the rumbling chimney. The smoke bends in the wind like a broken twig, sparing us the insult of soot and smell. The rising sun bleeds like a stuck hog on the nervous sea. I hear Widow Penner cackle the sailor's mantra.
Red in the morning, sailor's warning. Red at night, sailor's delight.
Such folk wisdom applies only when convenient, only when circumstances coincide. Storms come when storms come. This time she may be right. The captain points out the obvious.
All hands below. The fumigation is complete. We don't want anyone thrown overboard by the wind and rocking boat.
Silently and apprehensively, everyone moves into the metal coffin from which there is no escape. I stay on deck. I want to watch as long as possible. In a sheltered alcove near the captain's bridge, I watch the gathering storm. Mountains and valleys form where once wheat waved in gentle ripples. Ghostly choirs whistle in the rigging. The sun's gold lamp is shattered by black thunder and is scattered in bright lightning shards on the crumpled sea. The books are wrong. Water does not always flow down to the sea. It also rises when it wishes. It may be pulled down by gravity, but it also rises when levered by invisible forces beneath. And it flies horizontally from sharp peaks when whipped by wind. The mountains rise higher,
The ship slips from valley to valley. I look up to the mountain's watery snow-white peaks. The crew wrestles sails into tight bundles. Behind me, the captain bellows, "Hard to starboard!" Slowly we turn into the wind. Precarious rocking from side to side is transformed into bucking of an unbroken horse. Hind legs kicking, head down, then front legs rearing up like old Jasper when frightened by a train whistle. Again and again, the prow splitting each threatening mountain like a hatchet severing a chicken's neck.
"Young man, yes, you with the broken arm. Get down to your quarters or I'll have you in chains. This is not a picnic."
"Yes, sir." Inching toward the stern hatch where we dangerous single men are constrained, I cling with my one good arm to the railings. One moment tumbled forward and the next flung backward at full arm's length. I disdained handrails as crutches for the elderly and cowardly. Today I clutch them as the only means of survival. The hatch is closed against the swamping cascades. Now what do I do? I pound on the cover. Someone shouts from beneath,
"Open it between waves. It's not locked."
I cling to the handle through one more baptizing torrent, lift the heavy lid and slither down the stairs, letting the hatch close above me.
"Aaron, you had us worried."
"Thanks, Abe. I was a bit worried myself. This is some storm. Now what do we do?"
"There is nothing to do except lie here and hope this bouncing bucket stays afloat. Could I take the lower bunk today? I need to be close to my bucket. This constant bucking is turning my stomach inside out. Oh, here I go again. Ugh."
"By all means, take the lower bunk."
"I must have a cast-iron stomach. I haven't felt sick at all."
"I'd gladly trade my stomach for your broken... Oh, this isn't funny. Sorry. It's just that you looked all humped over like a constipated dog trying to take a... Shut your mouth, or next time I'll fill your shoes instead of the bucket."
At first I thought I was going to die of seasickness. Now I'm afraid I won't die. Oh, if I ever get to land, I will never set foot in another boat as long as I live. All night long we bounce along as if we're riding in a carriage with oval wheels.
"Aaron, is it morning yet?"
"I don't think so.
But it does feel like the storm has calmed down."
"Let's go take a look. I need to walk in the fresh air, and I need to empty this bucket. The smell alone could inspire me to place another contribution in the offering basket. Dear God, I think I've already given all I possess."
"Maybe you still have the widow's mite. You can give that up on the deck."
Thank God it has stopped raining and the moon is smiling through the clouds.
Hours pass like a horse dragging a threshing stone in circles. Elder Regeer gathers the faithful for a service of thanksgiving. He opens his hymn book, the Glaubensstimme, and introduces "Nimm Jesu meine Hände."
"Now take my hand, dear Jesus, and lead me on through life which soon is ending to endless day."
The SS Switzerland reverberates with the warmth and passion of the words in harmony. Even the engine seems to hum the bass part. If ever I find faith and peace, it will be through moments like this. This is double prayer, words and music. This is the language of heaven, or at least it is as close as we earthlings will ever come to that language.
And if my face should falter and doubt your power, yet to the goal you lead me, though dark the way, now take my hand, dear Jesus, and lead me on through life which soon is ending to endless day.
How could this poet speak my words? It is as if my deepest thoughts and yearnings are poured out in this song. I thought I was the only one who had doubts. The melody haunts me and comforts me. We are only 2 days from Philadelphia, 2 days from solid land. My arm is still sensitive, but healing. Soon our number of passengers will increase. Sarah Vogt, Peter's young wife, is in labor. She has carried her precious cargo through wind and rain, and she just couldn't wait to deliver in America. The ship's medical officer, I doubt he is a real doctor, is tending to Sarah with a little help from Elizabeth Clausen, who probably knows more about delivering babies than the officer. Sarah has been in labor for 24 hours. I'm surprised she didn't deliver during the storm last week. I hear a scream echoing throughout the ship, and then silence. I hear an infant cry, "Welcome to the world, little Vogt." Another cry. Is it twins? No, it is the sobbing of a man. Here comes Oma Clausen. Tears moisten the creases of her cheeks.
A little girl is born. Sarah Vogt has died. There is nothing we could do. Her heart stopped just as the baby was born. Oh, poor Peter! A new baby, a new world, and no helper. Captain, what shall we do? Sarah Vogt has died.
By tomorrow morning, we will be too close to land for burial at sea. Either we have the ceremony this evening, or we keep the body for burial in Philadelphia.
I will ask Elder Regeer what he thinks is best. He can consult with Peter. I will send a woman to nurse the infant.
The decision is made. Sarah's body will be buried at sea to avoid the complications of a funeral on land. With sunrise, Peter anticipated a new life, the two becoming one in this child. He and his young wife beginning a new family. At sunset, he bids farewell to that dream. Sarah becomes one with eternity. Her earthly journey has ended. Cornelius and Gerhard Wall, our resident carpenters, quickly assemble a coffin. At the captain's insistence, two heavy chains are placed in it with her body. So the body will remain at sea and won't wash ashore. Elder Regeer says the familiar words, "From dust to dust, from ashes to ashes," and adds, "Buried with Christ in baptism and waiting to rise with Christ to new life in the last days, absent from the body, present with the Lord, we mourn, but not as those without hope." An ocean of tears washes the deck. The wooden arm holding her coffin is released, and she plunges into the blue depth. Peter watches, but does not see. He hears, but does not comprehend. He reaches out, but cannot grasp.
She is gone.
That was Larry Walkentine reading a fictionalized version about a group of 600 Mennonites who, around the beginning of the 19th century, were forced to leave southern Russia and make the long, long trip, first all the way across Europe to Antwerp in Belgium, and then all the way across the Atlantic on a ship that used both sails and a steam engine. And as we heard, just a few days before landing in the New World, a woman who had just given birth unfortunately passed away, and the folks on board ship were pretty much forced to bury her at sea. And although this story was fiction, our author tells us that he carefully researched all the facts pertaining to the narrative. As a matter of fact, Larry's own family history is closely associated with the Mennonite community of Central California. He himself was born in Reedley, where he tells us at one time just about half of the citizens had a Mennonite background. We've had the pleasure of having Larry on our program before. He's a retired music professor, having taught at Fresno Pacific University. He's also the author of numerous publications, of prose, of choral works, and also of hymns. Thank you so much for your contribution tonight, Larry. We're hoping you're busy writing some more stories for us on programs to come. And so we come to the end of another edition of Valley Writers Read. Thank you so much for listening. If you would like to revisit tonight's or any other Valley Writers Read program, just go online to kvpr.org and link up with archived audio. Next week, two authors, Bob Hudgens and Jerry Fisher. In the meantime, this is your host, Franz Weinschenk, wishing you and yours a great life story until we meet again. Good night.
Valley Writers Read is a production of Valley Public Radio, produced by Don Weaver and Franz Weinschenk. Please join us again next Wednesday at 7 p.m. for another edition of Valley Writers Read.